So, Billy, you more than anyone would understand the workings of that paper mills, because you had to be familiar with the machines and knowing how they worked and the workforce who worked with them.
See, even though I worked in the office, I just didn't stay in it all day long. I mean, there was always something might want to query something on the worksheets, so it would necessitate going down to talk to someone in the machine room or something, you know.
Yeah.
And I spent most of the time down there.
Yeah. So you had to get to know everyone.
I knew.
Very well.
And I knew everyone very, very well, yeah.
So who were the outstanding workers? I mean, is this a fair question to ask you? Who were the ones that you felt were really productive in what they were doing?
I couldn't honestly say now there were some of them unproductive.
Were they the lads that worked on the machines, or were they the lads who worked on the pulp coming in? Or
no, well, you know? The whole idea when this war study started, when I started there, there were 20 men on each shift between the beaten loft where the pulp came in and the paper machines where the paper was made. There were 20 men, 10 men on each side. There were two paper making machines, 10 men on each side. Now, I'm led to believe that before that, there were more than 20 men on each shift. There could be maybe 25. So obviously, this work study eliminated a lot of things.
Yeah,
and just all worked, and
and to get the maximum results, you had to go through this method of calculating their work.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I knew the speed of the machine, and over 480 minutes, 8 hours. It should turn out so much.
Yeah.
We say 40 ton. I don't know. Can't fit the figure. And if they only made 35 ton, well, that was too bad for them.
Yeah. Tell me, how many years did you spend doing this? This work?
In the standards office, only about 3 years in it.
Yeah, but so in your entire work time there was about 30 years.
31 it? Years, yeah.
And what did you do in that 30 years?
Well, now, I was transferred after about 3 years down to the slitting department where this new German machine came in.
You were telling me that.
No.
Yeah.
Part of my job then was I was a progress chaser. Now,
can you explain that?
Oh, yeah. A progress chaser, it's an American term, I believe. A progress chaser was one who made sure that when the paper was slit, when the paper came into the railing department to be slid into the various smaller rolls, it either went down to the dispatch as rolls, or went to a re-slitting machine for smaller sizes again, or some went to a cutter house to be cut into sheets.
Yeah.
And it was my job to see that's what happened. Progress chaser, that was the word.
Chaser.
Progress. It's an awful term, but apparently it's an American term. It was used in America anyway. And that's what I was. Progress chaser.
And so Were you successful in what you were doing? I mean, was it a kind of a position that you were in that brought results? I mean,
that was the whole idea of it. Didn't make results, I was there with a job.
But did you stay a long time doing that?
I was there. Oh God, I was there for maybe 7 or 8 years doing that. But then I had other work. I'd say this German machine had the peculiar setups had to be done on that, and I was pretty good at that.
Yeah.
But then I realised after a while that some of these setups kept on repeating themselves.
Yeah. Repeating themselves in what way?
The same size. The same size. You want the 3 35-inch rolls across, or any mix of rolls, doesn't matter what them. But
and again,
I was in a position then that I always kept a copy of the old ones. I was only a matter of copying them out.
I see.
Yeah,
but the accuracy of this had to be spot on.
When you were dealing with centimeters and millimeters, you were dead on.
Yeah.
No, but not a matter of imagining 12 inches, the rule or anything like that.
Okay.
It was dead on.
Okay.
I mean, 508 millimeters was 20 inches, not the, you know, that kind of stuff. And right. it's all nowadays it's all 500 millimeters. It is, like yeah. That.
But tell me now, I'm just imagining there in the 50s and 60s where you would have had this assembly line where you would have women packing the papers, counting the papers.
I wasn't near that.
Did you not do any work in that area?
No, it wasn't that. I know that was at the other end of the mail, no.
Okay.
I had nothing to do with them.
Nothing to do with time work there? Okay.
No.
So...
But
what did you go on to do then? You know, where else did you go in the factory?
I was transferred then, after a couple of years down there, to the production planning.
What did that entail?
That entailed getting the customer orders and getting them into the order book for the paper making machine. And basically it was basically that the customer got what he ordered.
Yeah.
The orders came in. I had to put them into the slitting the book the worksheet for the slittings, and that was that. But there was always problems with production planning, because there were so many. You could only do the paper making machines were only capable of so much.
Yeah.
And we say you had orders for, say, 100. Just say we'll figure 100 tons. And you knew that the paper making machine could only make 80 tons. You then reach the problem then with the salespeople, the home salespeople and the export salespeople, who are going to be left out. You just can't. 80 ton was your max.
Yeah.
You can't make 100 ton. Something has to give.
And how did you make that decision? Who did you eliminate from the order sheet?
Well, no matter who you eliminated, you were in trouble. Because you'd say, oh, you're always eliminating me. What about him? He's getting all the stuff made. He just say, I'm sorry, we can't do it. Not only that, but the engineers came into it. The engineers, one might say, well, we want that machine now for 3 hours next week or something. So you had to please them as well. So it was always give and take. Then the boss in my department, Don Dardis, he would have dealt with all that.
What time are we talking about? Is this the 70s or is it earlier than the 70s?
Oh, I don't know what you're talking about, but if I should know if been a the production plant was long established before I went there. But I'm talking about from the 50s on.
Well, when you were actually working on it.
That would have been around the 60s.
Yeah. And but the factory, or at least the mills were producing, the work was very good at the time. I mean, the amount of orders coming in were enormous.
Yeah. They were working 7 days a week.
Yeah.
24/7, before that expression ever started, 24/7.
So the pressures of the work, I mean, did you feel that there was a big weight on your shoulders?
Yeah, I did, yeah. Because you were expected to, well, it wasn't that you were expected, but it was maybe just by nature that I just felt that you just wouldn't say, oh, well, sorry, but I work Monday to Friday, and that's too bad. You can do what you like at the weekend. It just wasn't my nature, and I thought the nature of some of the guys with me. When they came in on Saturday, and they came in on Sunday morning, maybe as well.
Right. So you worked up to anything up to maybe 60 hours in a week, or even more in that case.
Well, work it out yourself. You worked 8 hours a day, and. Now, you wouldn't be all day, you wouldn't be in there all day Saturday, nor all day Sunday. But nevertheless, you didn't, and incidentally, you didn't get paid for it. But that was just the nature of it, some was there. We did it. We had to be done.
Yeah.
There was no point in saying if you didn't come in.
Yeah.
You came in on Monday morning, and my God, boy, you wouldn't know where you were. Anyway, it never happened. We did it.
When you had a bonus scheme and when you had extra time and overtime, it's bound to run into trouble. You know, you're bound to have a situation where people may not want to come off their shift or would like to, who worked on the machine and wouldn't work on another machine and so on. Did you, because you were working on the floor, did you encounter any of that?
Can't say I'd never had any problem anyway. So many years up in the production planning, I was transferred down the mill again as where we finished up as the real house manager. Now, there was never any really problem in my department anyway.
Okay. And again, what did your work entail there as manager?
Oh,
what did you call it again?
I believe according to my redundancy notice, I was a Reeler House manager.
Reeler House,
yes.
What does Reeler House
mean? Well, I worked in the Reeler House originally, where this where the paper was reeled into the smaller house, sheets.
Yes. Yeah.
And then I moved to the production plan, and then I moved back again.
Yeah,
well, transfer back again, and that's where I finished up. But I never had any problems really of fellas transfer. There wasn't much of it really, in my department anyway.
Yeah, and did you have? You know, were you invited on to meetings with the rest of the board? Were you? You know, were you talking to?
I went to very little, very, 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 very few meetings. Generally, they were a waste of time. There were any meetings I was at, I would call them hangman meetings, everyone blaming everyone else. And when the mill opened up a second time there in 1984 or something, it was only for a short while, there were Yanks in charge. And I had one meeting there, and everyone was blaming everyone else for something that happened during the night. And this, whoever, I forget his name now, he says, I just want to know who dropped the ball, he says. Apparently, this is an expression in American football. You dropped the ball. Everyone else blaming everyone else. I just want to know, says he, who dropped the ball? End of story. Don't want any more of this bullshit and everyone blaming everyone else. But I was at meetings, and nothing ever came out of them, because everyone was blaming everyone else and something. And an awful lot of it appeared to end up in my department. I don't know why. If there was a complaint about anything, you may bet your bottom dollar it was going to be in a real house.
And the complaint was lodged with you?
And the complaint would be maybe the fact of paper coming from the paper making machines, and nothing I could do about that. But it certainly made up a mess of my job.
Yeah.
But I was at one meeting, I did stand up and say, I was listening that we had a bad night in the mill. And I said, I was up here at a meeting yesterday morning, and I'm hearing the same bloody talk now out of you. Now, what am I supposed to do about that? No one, just...
And usually, what were these arguments about? There might be
a pile-up machine with the paper-making machine. The paper-making machine was making the paper and was coming off in big jumbo rolls. And the idea was that they should come off. In theory, the paper-making machine was making paper at 1,000 feet a minute. The reeler, this German reeler, could unwind it into a smaller rod at 5,000 feet a minute. So in theory, there should be nothing, that the rod should come off the machine and straight onto the reeler and off, and it's another one on.
Yeah.
And work it out yourself. One would have making 1,000 feet a minute, the other one reeling off at 5,000 feet a minute. There should be plenty of spare time.
Yeah.
But if there was anything wrong with the paper, felt marks or anything like that, the paper would break when it'd be going through the reeler, and it'd have an awful mess up, and the rolls would pile up behind the reeler.
Yeah.
And this was a major complaint.